We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now, hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, the weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your networking community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Dave Wallace. With over 40 years' experience in all aspects of business development, Dave understands sales. He understands it's not about how much he knows about his products or services. It's about helping his customers solve their problems and achieve their goals. A proud graduate of the University of Notre Dame, Dave has been married for 37 years, has two children and one grandchild. He's an avid cyclist and currently leads Ride MKE, a cycling club with more than 300 members. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lori. It's an honor to be here. I think you told me it was show number 98.
This is correct.
That's very cool. I'm honored to be here.
Not quite 100.
Not but quite, but that's okay.
Very close.
It's great.
Next
it's
week.
Great. Yeah, it's great.
So sales, that's a fun topic. I'm sure a lot of people are very excited to hear about this one. It can definitely seem like an easy thing, but it's not. So why is sales so complicated?
You know, I think sales is complicated. I think we make it complicated for a number of different reasons. I think the first thing is that we try to sell somebody something. And we know as consumers, when we're on the quest for something, that we don't really like to be sold. We like to buy something. And we get aggravated with pushy salespeople in a store or anything like that. And I think that business-to-business sales is no different, that when people try to sell something, it just doesn't feel right. And I think that we overcompensate, and then we just kind of wrap ourselves around the axle. Mm-hmm. And we just make it much more difficult than it is. It is complex, but it's not difficult. I think those two things are mutually exclusive.
It's complex, but not difficult. I would agree with that. It takes a lot of time.
And it takes a process. Uh-huh. I mean, I think that you can tell when someone's winging it, and you can tell when someone is really moving systematically through a progression to achieve an end goal.
Yep.
And it feels comfortable if you're on the receiving end, but it also feels comfortable if you're on the delivering end, if you kind of know what you're doing and you lead people along. And I remember an old adage that I'm sure it's been used in many other environments, but it's what? We have two ears and one mouth.
Yep.
So listen twice as much as you talk.
And yes.
Sales is like that.
Very true. Very true. So what's the biggest mistake someone makes when they are just getting started in sales?
I think the biggest mistake, and it's a big mistake that people when they get started, but it's also a big mistake that people continue to make. Mm-hmm. And that's that, and it may sound philosophical, but I don't mean to be. That's when people try to make what it is they sell or what it is that they do the hero. So they try to focus all of their attention on the thing that they sell or the software package that they've developed. And it's natural to do that because if you developed a software package or you started a company, you're very proud of what you have and you want to show it off to the world.
Of course.
So it becomes the hero. It becomes the focal point of your attention. And the reality is, as cool as we think it is, the person on the other side of the conversation, they're going, I don't care. I don't care if you develop this, you know, working 24 hours a day for four. I don't care. I have my own problems to solve.
Yep.
And can you help me solve my problems? Have you even taken the time to listen to what my problems are? Mm-hmm. And when I started in sales 40 years ago, all of the training was product training.
Yep.
this is what it is. This is what it does. This is what it is. This is what it does. And this is why somebody should buy it, not anything about the customer. Mm-hmm. And I think that we still struggle with that today, is that we teach people, and even after we're mature in sales, we continue to go back to what it is we do or how it is that we do something. And I don't really care. I care if I push on the brake, I want the car to stop.
Yep.
If I push on the gas, I want the car to go. I really don't care about all the technology. Yeah, I care because I'm curious. But ultimately, it's about the experience of driving the car.
Sure. And is it doing what it's supposed to do?
Exactly. Exactly. And is it delivering the value to me that I'm interested in?
Sure.
Safety, prestige, whatever, sure. Whatever it might be.
Yeah. I agree with that. There's definitely a lot, and it kind of goes back to your first statement, and you know, no one likes to be sold to, and I think anyone that's in sales can just, you get more annoyed with that than probably the standard person does. But it's really taking the time to understand, you know, what is it that I'm looking for, and do you actually have something that can fulfill that need or not?
Right, right.
Nice. So a fun question here. I see you're really big into cycling. What's the coolest ride you've ever been on?
Wow. I've been on a lot of cool, I've been on a lot of really cool rides. I say the coolest ride I was on was, well, I thought it was last summer. I did the ride across Wisconsin.
Okay,
so you start at 6 a.m. in Dubuque and you end up at 6 p.m. in Kenosha. And that was cool. But the coolest ride I ever went on was a ride in California. I had a Trek bike camp and we climbed a mountain called Mount Figueroa. And it's a 10-mile climb. I think it's 4,000 plus feet of climbing. And I mean, you start and you make an immediate, you're kind of on this flat spot and you team up with your group and you take pictures and everybody's face is just really, really tense because they know what's coming.
Yep.
And then you start going up a hill and you make a turn and you go like, oh, crap. And then you see the guys that are really fast and you're halfway up this first little part and they're already on the switchback and they're, you know, 30 feet above you and you can see them going in the opposite direction. You're like, what did I just get myself into? And then when you get to the top, and you do get to the top, and there's a certain amount of suffering, but when you get to the top, number one, it's a beautiful view. Mm-hmm. And number two, you're just like, wow, I did that. And now I get to go down.
Yeah, which is the fun part.
Which is the fun. I told somebody, I said, climbing is really, really hard.
Uh-huh.
But downhill descending is terrifying.
Oh, I believe that.
Because you have I've been on rides where you have this Thelma and Louise moment where you're not sure, am I going to go off soaring into or am I going to be able to make this turn?
Ooh.
And some people descend like crazy people, and I'm not one of those. I'm not bold enough, so my brakes get a little warm on these long, steep descents.
Sounds like a great experience overall. Well, let's talk about some networking, because as you will probably vouch for, it is a critical part of the sales process.
Yep.
My goal with this podcast is really to remove the fear and uncertainty associated with that word networking.
Mm-hmm.
So can you share with our listeners your most successful or favorite networking story that you have?
Wow. Networking. That's not my area of expertise, but I would say that the most interesting network experience that I had was I attended a meeting on a whim. It was an organization called Wisconsin Business Owners. And I started talking to a woman at the meeting and I was explaining what I did. And it was probably very early in my entrepreneurial career, so not that long ago. And for whatever reason, I did it right. And I didn't talk about me, and I didn't talk about how cool I thought what I was doing was. I talked about what I was hoping to deliver to future customers. And apparently, somehow we connected because she invited me out to coffee. And the next thing I know, she invited me to participate in a book, an anthology.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've worked with some of the other authors on the book.
Yep.
And somehow or another, we went to number one. Holy mackerel. But that was really cool. And I think the lesson I learned from that is you know, you got to kind of back it down. And when somebody asks a question, you have to kind of speak from the heart and not what you think they want to hear. And then the other thing is you got to always have questions to come back with. I remember a lesson I learned long ago from someone who commented to me what a great conversationalist my wife was. And it was because she never said anything. She just kept asking people questions. Because who do we want to talk about? We want to talk about ourselves.
Sure. Yeah.
So I would say from a networking perspective, if you can engage the other person and get them to tell you about what they're doing and what's important to them, then you become memorable to them, even if you don't say a whole lot.
Yep.
And they might have something to share that dovetails very nicely with what it is that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a very smooth and unforced conversation. And you kind of just, and they start, you do that? How do you, and then all of a sudden you have this neat conversation. But if you come in, hi, I'm Dave Walls, blah, 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 and this is what I do. And they're like, just shut up.
We've all been to those types of networking events before.
Exactly.
This is great. I like the story that you shared, that you attended an event without probably no expectations. I assume just checking it out, right?
Which exactly.
I think most people do in the Milwaukee area, at least, because there's hundreds of different events and organizations to attend. And the outcome of attending that event is that you participated in a book.
Right. Yeah, it's very cool. And that has had follow-up implications around business that I've been able to get involved in, because all of a sudden when you're an author of a book, you have a certain level of street cred that I'm not sure if it's justified. I'll say that it is. But regardless, you're an expert in whatever it is that you do. And then people kind of say, hey, well, tell me about that. Tell me about you. And all of a sudden you're having a business conversation instead of a book conversation.
Yep. Awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
So you attend a number of different groups. You've been in the corporate space, and obviously you have your own business now. You're building and nurturing your network, and it's been established over the years. What do you do to stay in front of and best nurture your network?
Right now, my primary tool is LinkedIn.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if it's the best tool, but it's the one that is, at this point, it's the easiest to use. And I was moderately active on LinkedIn when I was in my corporate life. But once I became business owner, entrepreneur, I had to change my focus. I had to learn how that's different.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that was one of the byproducts of getting involved in the book, is you have to promote, but you have to promote in different ways. And part of the way you promote is you promote your co-authors and you try to become a connector.
Yep.
And so now my goal, and I'm pretty close to on track, my goal was to have for 2018 was to have something on LinkedIn every day. I don't always create it, but there's lots of good stuff out there to share.
Mm-hmm.
Harvard Business Journal is a good source,
sure.
Inc. Magazine, Forbes Magazine, my fellow co-authors. And then my goal is to, one, it was to, I start off blogging, and then I found out that I write too much. So I thought, well, what about vlogging? Because mm-hmm. I know video can be very impactful. So my goal is to vlog once a week. And so far, I think I've only missed 1 week this year. And the challenge with that is that you got to keep it short. I think I start off with a few minutes, and now I'm trying to keep each one under 2 minutes. And I always try to tell a story that's not directly, I don't just go right into business speak. I try to connect two things that look or sound or look or feel a little bit different. So today's one out today was about being a hero.
Okay.
And I can't sing, so I didn't sing the song I Need a Hero. But I talked about heroes, and I talked about the fact that Charles Barkley made a great comment years ago when he said, I'm not a role model. Just because I can dunk a basketball doesn't mean I should raise your children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we put hero status on the wrong things. And then the translation to business is kind of the comment I made very.
Sure, absolutely.
The comment is, are you making your product or your service your hero? So that's been my style. And if you read my chapter in the book, anybody, your listeners, that's what I did. My chapter was a mashup of cycling and sales.
Nice.
And that's just kind of the style that I feel very comfortable with. So that's how I'm out there. I'm looking to update my website, but you know, I'm moving slowly. I need to get some content that's less about that's less about me. So I'm working with somebody who's going to help me take an outside in view of content. And then I'm going to get some, I'm going to redo my website. That's going to be a little bit, hopefully a little bit, will serve my clientele and future clientele a little better.
Good. So just adding value to your network sounds like your approach, your strategy, which is important. Mm-hmm. And LinkedIn is a great platform to be doing that on.
Yeah.
What advice would you offer the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
Looking to grow their – well, I think that this kind of – this goes into sales. So so we're going to take some – we're going to take some research, and then we're going to try to apply it. We're going to try to apply it to the real world.
Okay.
So there's an organization out there called CEB, Corporate Executive Board. They're now part of Gartner Group, so it makes them a $5 billion behemoth. They're a research and analysis group, but they also serve their customers. So one of the things that they did several years ago was they did research and they found that a buying organization is 57% along their buying path before they ever engage a seller. And we talked about that in your class.
Yep.
And the challenge for the seller is that by the time they contact a buyer, the buyer already has a bunch of preconceived notions, and we won't go into all what those are. You can kind of figure them out. So the challenge for business owners is, okay, if I'm going to get ahead of this curve, I need to figure out if people are doing all this research, other data about how many sources of research, how many sources of data they look at, 57% along the way, I need to figure out where do my potential customers learn? And then I need to meet them. And meet is a ubiquitous term. It could be online. But I need to find where they learn, and then I need to get involved in that channel so that I start to have – I think years ago, remember a guy in town, Phil Gerbyshack,
I think
Phil's down.
He's been on this show.
Okay, so Phil – hi, Phil. How you doing? Phil's down in Florida, I think, living a good life, but I think he's still working. But I worked with Phil years ago when I thought I was going to do this Twitter thing back when it was just getting started. And I didn't know what he was doing. But he talked about something called ambient intimacy, which is probably a passe term now, so I'm kind of dating myself. But it's this idea that you need to meet people where they're learning. And then you start develop this weird sort of relationship without knowing it.
Yep.
And then at some point when they're ready to move, they're going to remember you. So the advice is, if you believe the data, and I believe the data because these guys don't mess around with their research, they are 57%, maybe more along their journey. So I got to figure out where do my ideal customers learn?
Yep.
And then I got to go and meet them there. And that could be groups on LinkedIn.
Sure.
Being a contributor to a group. I mean, you get the idea, right?
Yeah.
Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And this is actually a data point that I share very similar along the lines of yours with regards to sales and marketing. Google conducted some research a few years ago that the B2B buyer on average conducts 12 searches before they actually engage in a company for a general inquiry. So they've done searches that include general, here's my problem, how do I solve it? What are my options to solve this problem? Whatever it may be. They're watching videos, they're reading reviews that other people have written about the companies providing the information. And they're asking their network, do you know anyone or have you used someone that can solve this problem for me?
Right.
So that really falls into your your message as well. So it's really identifying, where are they searching for this type of information?
Right. And if you can meet them where they're trying to learn, and they're going to be trying to learn in a lot of different places, then you that's how you're going to grow your network.
Absolutely. Cool.
So again, going back to my very initial conversation, it's not hard. It's complex, but it's not difficult.
It is complex.
You kind of have to. Yep. You have to figure out what all the pieces are.
Yes.
But if you color by numbers, and you know that number one is blue and number two is red, et cetera, it can look very complicated when you begin. But what you really you just have to follow the process. So it's complex, but it's not really difficult.
Sure. Yep. So digital networking or traditional networking, which one do you find more value in?
I'm an old school guy. I want to look you in the eye. I want to read your body language. I want to see you roll your eyeballs when I say something stupid or something like that. But it's very expensive. I mean, you have to be there. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you have to combine the two. You have to figure out how do I do these digital things. And so I think for me, that's one reason why I like a blog, because it's digital in the sense that it's on LinkedIn or on my website. But there's some level there because I'm looking at the camera, and you can put a name and a face together.
Sure.
That may work to my disadvantage. It may work to my advantage. But that's a chance I'm willing to take.
Sure.
But I think really it's difficult to close important pieces of business remotely.
Uh-huh.
It's happened to me in my career, but it's the exception. And if you bank on it, if you're in a transactional oriented business, then you can get away with it. But if you're in a complex business to business sale where there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of buying influences, things like that, I really believe you need to meet people. And I believe that that carries over to networking.
Absolutely. I think the face-to-face can also be digital, though, with the video conferencing.
Right.
Because there's definitely been a number of engagements that we've closed in that space before. But I agree, just being in the same room with someone has a significantly greater impact than just having a conversation on the phone or messaging via email or whatnot.
Right, totally agree.
So Dave, if you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
Oh, God, that's a painful thing. if I could go back to my – I didn't pay attention.
Okay.
I didn't think about anything beyond getting to Friday. I mean, I started off my career in New York City, well, Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
And all I was thinking about there was I got to get to the weekend because this place is crazy and there's fun stuff to do on the weekends. Mm-hmm. But I really didn't have the sense of big picture. I think that. That would have perhaps served me a little bit better. I think that, I mean, I love Notre Dame. I love my education there. I wasn't a business major. I was an English major. So, and back then, if you were an English major or liberal arts, you really didn't take any business classes. So while I knew how to read and write and think analytically, I was kind of learning it. And so I think I would go back to my 20-year-old self and I'd say, become a systems thinker. Look at the big picture. Look at everything that's going on, even if it's not anything that you think directly affects you today. And I think that that's what the really successful young entrepreneurs do. And they may be unconscious competence. They may not realize that they're system thinkers, but that's what they're doing. They're somehow able to visualize a much bigger picture than just the thing that they're doing. I mean, I think of Mark Zuckerberg.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, he was visualizing Facebook, at least according to the movie Social Network. But it had a very specific tactical purpose. But it seems like the message was that he was already thinking about what it was beyond somebody being able to post something about themselves and find out what somebody else is doing. And I think that that's systems thinking, I think, is none of us do enough of it, or most of us don't do enough.
Sure. No, I agree with that. I think a lot of people, I mean, there is a lot of be present, be in the moment, but you do have to look at the big picture and say, how is this helping me to achieve that bigger goal at the end of the day.
Right.
Really good advice. Pay attention.
Yeah.
Dave, we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who would be the one person you'd love to connect with? And do you think you could do it within the sixth degree?
Wow. See, there's a systems thinking question that I've never even thought about. I don't know. I'm pretty lucky. I've got an interesting network that gets me to an awful lot of people in less than 6 steps.
Okay.
So, I mean, if I think about, who would I like to meet? Well, I would have loved to have met Steve Jobs, but he's no longer with us. So he would be one that I.
Sure.
He was a jerk, but he was. Brilliant jerk.
Uh-huh.
He talked about somebody who changed change the world.
Totally.
Who else would I like to meet? Boy, that's a really good one. I think it would be interesting to meet Elon Musk.
Okay.
I think I'm 3 degrees from him, probably, maybe 2. I'm lucky. I have a brother who's a CEO of a publicly traded Silicon Valley high tech company.
Well, that definitely helps.
So that cuts a whole bunch of degrees
sure
out right there just because of that.
Sure.
And I had a friend who almost worked for, when, she may have actually, I haven't talked to her for a while. She may have gone to work for SpaceX.
Okay.
But he's doing some pretty interesting things. And then of people my age, boy, now I'm really craning my brain. You caught me. You stumped me.
Yeah, no.
Beyond those two,
interesting.
I can't think of anybody else.
But I'd say Elon Musk is probably similar caliber as Steve Jobs as far as changing the way people think and mindset and the world and whatnot.
But so. I've been lucky in my career. I met Father Ted Hesburgh was president of Notre Dame when I was there. He's a remarkable man. I met Jimmy Carter when he was president because he came to speak at our graduation.
Cool.
We didn't have a long conversation, but so I think that I'm a big sports fan.
Okay.
So from a sports perspective, as much as I hate Alabama, I would like to meet Nick Saban.
Okay.
I keep calling him Lou Saban. That's really dating myself. Only because here's a football coach who basically it's all about the process. And I hate them because they always beat Notre Dame. Well, they don't always beat Notre Dame, but the last time they played, they did. And I'm tired of them winning all the time. But he's applied some very business-like philosophies to coaching a bunch of 19 to 22-year-olds and figures out how to win consistently.
Nice.
It would be interesting to talk to him.
So you mentioned, obviously, you're an author of a number one best-selling book. But what book are you reading right now?
I just started reading, what is it called? Something Your Tribe.
Okay.
From Christine Comerford. And I'm trying to remember the name of the, something, I can't remember. God, it's terrible. I just started it. I just got it a couple of days ago. I just finished, the Checklist Manifesto is a book I read recently, which is a very interesting book. I do a lot of Audible. So I count listening to a book.
So do I.
As reading.
There's nothing
book,
wrong with that. You're still getting the information.
That's right. You're still getting the information. There's a book, Leonardo da Vinci book he's just amazing. And then, I listen to all the espionage and all that kind of stuff that doesn't make you think.
Some fun stuff.
Lots of fun stuff.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, I've got my Audible account. I share it with I have an account and a buddy of mine has an account. And we trade. I probably got over 400 titles in my library. I get 2 a month and it's been going on for 15 years or so.
Yeah.
So.
When you're riding bike, is that when you're listening to them? No.
I don't put anything in my ears when I'm riding.
Really?
I want to hear everything that's going on. No, when I walk the dog, when I'm driving in the car.
Sure, yep.
A lot of windshield time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes on a plane, mm-hmm. I'll listen to it for a while till I start to get groggy and realize I'm sleeping through some of the stuff and then I turn it off. But I'll catch, I don't have to. Some people, they can only listen to an audiobook if they can listen like for 45 minutes consecutively.
Yeah.
I can listen to it now because I've been doing it so long. I can listen to it driving from my house to Pick and Save, which is a 6-minute drive.
Sure. Yeah.
And then I just turn it off and then I pick it up when I get back in. And so that's, that's kind of, those are kind of some of the things
cool.
I'm doing right now.
Yeah. Nice. Any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
I think you just got to show up.
Yeah.
You got to do it. I mean, and the more you do it, the less uncomfortable you become or the more comfortable, depending on how you want to phrase it. And I think the real thing is if you ask people about their business, and there was a great article about 8 things you should ask that have not that aren't what do you do, and I can't remember, but something is like, what excites you right now, or what book are you reading? But different things to just start the conversation.
Yeah.
So I would say that's And I think you got to experiment. You know, there was a sales, there was a business guru, Tom Peters, I think he might still be alive, but he used to say, fail fast, fail often. And I think there's different iterations of that statement.
Totally.
This idea that, you know, try something. If it doesn't work, it's not the end of the world. You just try something else.
Yeah, keep moving, because there's going to be the right way at some point.
Right, exactly. And the right way for you might not be the right way for me.
Correct, because we're all different.
Right, exactly.
Nice. All right, Dave, if anyone was interested in getting in contact with you, what is the best way that they can reach you?
Best way to get me is just email me at DaveWallace@BayRidgeConsultingGroup.com.
All right, and we will include that information in the show notes.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being on the show today, Dave.
Lori, thanks for having me. It was great fun. It always is.
It is, yes. Yeah. Indeed. Good conversation.
All right.
Thank you so much. This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Dave Wallace for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.